you're made comments too in the audio about the speed limit sign. I understand you can't really drop the speed limit without getting into issues. Have you explored a speed reduction sign, like a yellow and black versus the white and black? The white and black sign is a speed limit sign. That's the one you write summonses for.
Right.
The yellow and black is a suggested speed limit. Now, I have issued summons for that myself, and I wrote them under a different statute, either speed unreasonable and imprudent for the conditions. But you might consider some type of a speed reduction sign going out, or a road hazard sign to slow the vehicles down so they don't come up to the gate.
To prep them.
You know, if you put another gate there, that would help. Mm-hmm. But I would check that out. I think you can do that. I mentioned
because it's not legally enforceable, but you can.
It's like when you see on a curve.
Right.
Yes.
Got it.
Oh, the ticket is, but you said it's a ticket written for unreasonable.
Right.
Imprudent speed.
Right.
Whatever that means.
Right.
Yeah, under the manual for uniform traffic control devices. I'm not sure, but you might want to check out that sign, the speed limit sign you have posted coming into the gate just after Fox Hill Road. I mean, there's a statutory requirement that it has to be either, I think it's 3 or 4 feet from the road level. And it doesn't look like it's high enough to me. It's supposed to be from road level to the bottom of the speed limit sign. And I didn't go out and measure, but when I saw that, I know when the highway department puts it up, they just slap it on.
Fox Hill?
On Tuxedo Road?
Yeah. When you're first coming in. It does look low to me.
Yeah, it's very low.
Yes.
So it has to be 3, so we just need to check the height.
I believe it's 3 feet.
Check the heights of all signs.
And that's from road level.
That particular sign anyway, something up
there. Yeah, it's low.
Sure.
Right.
But I figured you guys did it for a reason.
Jeff couldn't find the one.
Can I ask a question? Is there some reason why the guards, police officers obviously, but the guards can't be armed at all times? Should they not be made to carry a weapon?
I can answer that.
You answer that.
You require a full carry pistol permit from the state of New York, and the position as a traffic guard / dispatcher does not authorize them to carry a weapon. You would have to be a peace officer or a police officer. The individuals in the booth are neither. And you also, because of the training and the liability involved, you want to make sure you restrict that to police officers in the event there is any kind of a shooting. Years ago, as I said, they used to carry guns more freely. That day is gone. But it would be nice to have the dispatchers carrying weapons in there, but they would have to be hired as a part-time police officer or a full-time police officer and attend the police academy.
But yet a Brinks guard can carry a gun.
They're carrying it under the Brinks license.
A Brinks guard.
It's private.
It's private, and they're not police officers. You know, we're protected as police officers under probable cause statutes. Mm-hmm. They are not. When they shoot somebody, you have to be right.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned a peace officer. Let's say you employ a peace officer as a gate guard, but we didn't employ them at, they're a part-time gate guard, but they're a peace officer somewhere else. Can they carry in our booth because they're a peace officer somewhere else, or no?
I think you would be taking on unwanted liability to take that chance.
That's right.
Okay. It's a touchy area.
Right.
And civil service, I think, would step in and have something to say on that again.
Okay.
But back to the issue of the booth and coming in. I know a lot of people don't like to be stopped, you know, at the gate. They feel harassed. And, you know, you talked about easy pass. You know, easy pass is one thing, but we need hard to pass coming in. I had a lot of people complain to me over the course of my employment here, and I wrote down some of the comments they made, which I was thinking from one to the other. But people, let me see if I can find that. People made remarks, you know, about, you know, they felt like they were stopping to get a blood test. I one person stopped by, said they felt like going through airport security, and they failed. I mean, they felt they were being harassed, intimidated. They came up with every excuse in the world. You know, they didn't like being stopped, but they all came to an understanding that once they got through the gate, you know, they had the same understanding of why we're there, and that's, damn, I feel safe. Mm-hmm. Once you got through, say, if you're that hard screening me, I know you're going to be that hard screening the next person, and my family, my wife, my kids, you know, we can go out on the street and feel safe.
Yeah.
And that's all part of having an officer there, one-on-one, talking, looking, and I can't even count the number of arrests that I made just by looking into cars. I picked up a guy, for example, he had multiple suspensions on his license, and in the back he had a big case all full of these glass ampules. And I stopped him, and it turned out everything was written in Russian. You know, he had 2,000 vials of Russian illegally imported steroids. And I had to go to three different pharmacists to identify what it was. And, you know, you find all kinds of odd things like that. But observation is key. And not to get away from the booth, I'll give you a very quick example. Town of Tuxedo. There was an incident, Route 210, 17A, which we know as of now. Orange County Sheriff's Department comes down. He's coming down the road. He follows what he picks up as a stolen car on the radio. He's going to stop it up on 17A before he gets to 17, but he hesitates. He's alone. This is during the day. And he called ahead to the town of Tuxedo, and he followed the car down right to Tuxedo Square. They pulled the car over by Tuxedo Square at the south end by the deli. And while they were, as soon as they stopped the car, they pulled the driver out. They're arresting him. There was a van parked at the other end of the parking lot. And one of the town cops, who's not there anymore, was very sharp and on the ball. He saw this other car and another person in there. And he kind of moseyed around. And he went up and looked at this girl in there. He said, "What are you looking at? What are you doing here?" And she says, "Well, I don't know. I'm looking at him." And he opened up the door, and she had a fully automatic Uzi right under the seat. Now, what was she waiting for? Had that sheriff's department deputy stopped the car up on 17A, she was the backup. He probably would have been shot and killed right in the back. But he acted through observation. He sensed something was wrong, pulled her out. You know, they made a really good arrest. They both had records. These are things, you know, why it's so important to have that one-on-one interaction. And I don't trust electronics anymore, the way things are going. But if you can take that into consideration, you know, just in deciding to keep the booth where it is, please. And I'll finish up by saying, so I don't take everybody's time here, the quality of life we all cherish and enjoy in Tuxedo Park is second to none. You know, the people, everybody counts on you to preserve and protect it. As the saying goes, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Well, the booth is broken, so we need to fix it, and now. And I'll close with a quote from Jerry Fix, former judge we had here, told me during a trial years ago. He said, "Once you've made your case, sit down and shut up." Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
And we will be in touch. Thank you.
Oh, that's good.
Excellent.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Any other comments?
I just really came to listen. So.
Yeah. I can tell you that it's something that we're not taking lightly, as you can tell. We have been talking about all sorts of things and, you know, making sure that we have all the right input because we have a wonderful situation here where there's nothing there anymore that we can do it and make sure that it's built safe and, you know, learn from certain things and, you know, make sure that we have, you know, good intentions of what we're needing to do. And we all have been definitely part of the process and are pulling in the correct professionals that we need to speak with also. So thank you so much.
So yes. We do agree that the architects do not have a sense of this community.
No, we didn't ask. No, they actually do. They both worked here, but we didn't ask them for
not
anything.
In this kind
but
of capacity.
All we asked them for in these drawings were just conceptual drawings of the scenarios.
What is the that projected cost of this project?
It's going to be, you know, we're, you know, it just depends what goes in the middle. If it's just, you know, we've got the funds, that there were funds donated for the booth. We have, you know, the insurance paid 135,000. We've spent
320.
So, you know, and we there was so 130 plus 360 was donated. So we're, you know, we're not wanting to go over what we have to do whatever we need to do. If we put back the booth,
sounds like you already have.
No, if you put back the booth, and the booth ends up costing much more because of code upgrades, there is another part of our policy that will kick in an additional amount for that as well. So that's why we're making sure and looking, you know, and investigating
all
of them.
I think the point of the human element is you can't, you're absolutely right, there's just no second. That's it. I mean, that's the key to, I think, a safe community is to have, you know, smart people that are keeping their eyes
exactly
open. But I was reasonably appalled by the concept of, you know, those great barrier things and retractable things, to, you know, tire punchers.
You know, we didn't ask for any of those. We just told the architects
that was on the written description.
Right, to think out of the box.
Looking at pictures, it was all written description.
We gave them what we gave the architects were five options that had come out from the public.
Mm-hmm.
One was breaking through the wall.
Mm-hmm.
One
that
was
the first one.
One was having easy pass lanes.
Yeah.
Pushing the booth back. Some people wanted to see what it would look like pushing the booth back. One was putting it back where it was. Another was not having one at all. And that's all we told the architects. We didn't ask for landscaping. We didn't ask for cost analysis. Mm-hmm. We let them see, you know, they know our architecture here very well. I think both of them, one captured it almost identical, one thought a little bit different out of the box in the sense of architecture, but all we asked was for conceptual drawings. That was it. We didn't ask for surveillance, we didn't ask for safety measures in that regard. We just wanted a picture of what it would look like in scenario A, B, C, D, or, you know, et cetera. That was it. Cost-wise, we're going to have to come up with a budget as a board.
Can I say something about cost? Cost has really, there's two scenarios. I'm going to exaggerate, so go to either extreme. One is, you know, we cost it out and all the taxpayers this year absorb the cost, so that, you know, the life expectancy of what we're going to build might be 50, 75, 100 years. So we have the cost absorbed by this year's taxpayers. Somebody moves in next year and gets a free ride for the next 50 years, because they're going to have a great gate, everything working, it's already paid for.
Yes.
All right?
Right.
That's not fair. So, and again, I'm exaggerating, but just to paint the picture. So we're looking at the real life expectancy of this booth and really try to be as fair as possible when you know, how much each taxpayer needs to pay and how long of a period of time. So probably the best way to do this is to take a note or a bond over 10 or 15 or 20 years, whatever it is. So you're paying, each taxpayer each year pays for that little bit of a slice. You're here 5 years, you pay for 5 years of that slice. You move in next year and you stay 10, well, that's your 10 years here. You live here now, but you move out 2 years from now, you know what? You're only paying for your little bit that you enjoyed the booth. That, to me, seems more fair than burdening this year's people with this year's residents with the cost and somebody moving in 2 years from now and free riding for 10 years. So when you look at the cost amortized over 10, 15, 20 years, the per annum cost of this is really de minimis. So that's why we haven't looked at the cost anymore.
I know, but
If it's going to cost $100 or if it's going to cost $200, if it's going to cost $300, it's over 20 years.
I understand, but you still have to have a number.
I understand that.
From which to...
We didn't want to limit the creativity of the architects from something that's going to be amortized over 15 and cost it over 10, 15, 20 years. So that's why we haven't spoken cost yet, because the annual difference between something costing $100,000 and $200,000 over a period of 20 years is very small.
So what's your
so the process of what we're going to do,
that
this is what we're going to discuss now. So what our plan is the following. We only have a certain size footprint. Let's go to the very basic first. We only have some, we've already surveyed the property right when it happened, because we weren't sure how much was town property versus village property. So we immediately invested in a good survey of not just the booth, but of the police building and the keep. So everything was surveyed. We own all that land that the booth was on. There's a little bit, I think it's right outside where the little garden thing was. Then it turned into town property.
Yeah, we're
right?
About several feet.
Right, it's pretty tight.
Triangle thingy?
It's pretty tight. Yeah. So essentially, we're going to have the footprint we have that we're going to try to work within that frame. It's obviously not going to be as big as they've drawn it, because
right.
You know, they, you know, he drew it with two, and you know, yeah, because that's what we asked him for. That's what some of this stuff was, to say, you know, what would it be like. So that's the first thing. We're going to stay within the framework. The Alan and I spoke about it, because Alan and I have been, you know, are the liaisons to the police department and have been working on this, you know, with the other trustees, but pretty much Alan and I have been, Alan McHugh. So it will be Alan McHugh, myself, John Ledwith, either the part-time chief that we will be bringing in, or a police officer and a gate guard, so we can get all the input of the security measures that are needed of a police department. No one knows better than the head of your police. We have the luxury of having a chief that's living here right now as well, and another chief that has retired, so we can pull from our past chiefs of their experiences and needs. The liaison to the bar is Alan McHugh, and we'll have someone from the bar also that has been working with us already on concept design of certain things. Julia Simmet has been working with us, so she'll be excellent. Susan Boyle is doing a little bit, but she's been busy, so we have that as well. Another resident has offered her time as well, that's an interior designer that can work with Julia because she's busy. So we'll have those professionals guiding us, and then, you know, we'll be working with the architects. And then we'll start there and then go to that point. So Alan and I are, you know, with, you know, this is what we're talking about today. And in the next meeting, the board is going to guide us as a group, our next steps to start going, because we want to get this moving along. The money is sitting there.
What's your time frame?
Me personally?
No, seriously.
Yesterday. No, right. Honestly, I would say by midsummer, we should be already done.
Really?
Done. But we have to bid out. So this has to go out through RFPs, because now we're past the emergency stage. The emergency was getting them in place where they were and get things operating to be working to keep the protection. Now we're in the phase of, we'll have to go out to bid for building the booth.
How are you going to do that?
It's a process that we have to do that.
To whom are you going to...
It gets publicized.
Publicized.
It gets publicized. There's an actual process you have to go through that it happens. So Debbie puts it in the paper. You know, it goes off the architect plans. They come pick up the plans. They do an actual formal bid. And then we look at those bids. It's done, you know, it's done through everything that we do, from the dams to some of the projects we do in the park.
How are you going to avoid things like the regrettable pointing that was done to the keep? The really sad use of not matching the color of the mortar to the, you know, putting... Have you looked at the keep?
Have you looked at it? Yeah, I have. I don't see any problem with...
don't see. Because if you look at the keep now, all I see when I come out are underneath those demi-lune windows... are these big white loaves that have been jammed into the
thingy. That used to be an actual potting.
Yeah, I know, but if you're going to fill it with something, you have to use a color. It's really easy to do. You use a color in the mortar to sort of blend and make it.
Well, that's what they did. They did
Mary Jo. Look at it. It's white. It looks like a nice...